Vet voice. Credentialing crunch. I can relate to Andy Romy's story, February. When I left the Air Force as an aircraft mechanic in 1972, I inquired about getting a commercial license. The school would not give me any credit for anything I knew about airplanes, saying it would just be easier for me. I could not see paying for something I already knew, so I became a mailman. John W. Watson, Bellefonte, Pennsylvania. As a former Army Security Agency MP, I hear this. In 1972, when I received my training at Fort Gordon, Georgia, it was 8 weeks long, 6 or 7 days a week, and 10 to 16 hours a day. In my area, the average civilian police officer's training was 6 weeks long, 5 days a week, and 8 hours a day. Yet we were not considered real police by our civilian counterparts. It didn't matter that MPs had basically all the same duties as other police. Many of us, due to our experiences as MPs, went into law enforcement and were much better police for it. Jay Goodman, Salem, Ohio. Fellow veterans, be proactive. While earning my civil engineering degree at Michigan State University using the World War II GI Bill, I transferred from the Naval Reserve to the Civil Engineer Corps Reserve. After graduation, I was placed on active duty due to the Korean War. My officers were licensed professional engineers, PEs, so upon graduation, I obtained a letter from my PE supervising officer. That letter was forwarded to the Michigan Licensing Board for PEs, which accepted my time in the CBs toward my required 4 years of engineering supervision to make me eligible to take the state board exams for my PE license. James R. Carr, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Andy Romy's article really hit home. I served a total of 35 years, active and reserve, in the Army and Air Force. The last 15 were in the Air Force Reserve as an AeroVac Tech flight medic. I was a certified EMT living in Virginia at the time. Upon retirement in 2006, I tried to challenge the LVN or LPN test to get a job. The state would not accept anything but Army medical training. Despite the fact that I was certified with 15 years' experience, along with 2 deployments, I was considered untrained. According to Virginia, all the lives I saved, treating and bringing casualties out of Iraq to home station, should be worse off because I wasn't trained. Ed Kassif, San Antonio. Editor's note. The article incorrectly identified G. Bill Kilgore's branch of service. He was a Navy corpsman with the Fleet Marine Force. The Smoke Jumpers. I enjoyed reading the article by Carl Gidland, February. As in all wars before and since, the black soldiers more than proved themselves worthy and capable. In the article, there is mention of the Japanese balloon bomb program and that the 555th was deployed to fight fires caused by these devices. Yes, there was concern about fires, but the Japanese needed strong, high-altitude winds to carry the balloons across the Pacific. What they did not take into account was that those winds happened only during the wet season, and as a result, there were virtually no fires of consequence. By the way, one unexploded bomb did kill 6 people in Oregon on May 5, 1945, when it blew up while they were handling it, not knowing what it was due to secrecy. Norman Martin, Bainbridge Island, Washington. More Than a Story. Matt Grills' article brought wonderful memories back for my wife and me, February. The chapel is special to us because that is where we married in 1975. We are happy to hear it has been brought back to life. Not only is it a new home for memorializing the courage of the 4 chaplains and the Dorchester crew, but it is a chance for veterans to return to the beautiful little chapel that brought comfort to many sailors. We look forward to a visit in the near future. David and Lori Humberger, Lake Mary, Florida. I read the article about the 4 chaplains with interest. My first contact with their story was during a field trip to Washington in 1964. We visited many sites, but the one I remember most is the Wax Museum, and the exhibit I remember most vividly is the 4 chaplains. Seeing them standing on the deck with all the noise of the war and the ship sinking is ingrained in my memory. Looking back, that may have been one of the things that led me to enlist in the Navy. J. Schaefer, Anderson, South Carolina. Kudos and a special thanks to Matt Grills for the fascinating article on the Chapel of Four Chaplains. I cut out the article and attached it to the back of my framed Legion of Honor award, which I received in 1982. You answered a question I've had since the mid-90s, when I took family to visit the chapel. It was gone, vanished like Brigadoon, and no one seemed to know what had happened to it. Glad to know the chapel has a beautiful permanent home in Philadelphia. I will be planning a visit with my grandkids later this year. The story of the four chaplains should be told every year so that selfless deeds and the example they set are never forgotten. Jay Snyder, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Presidential action on immigration. Representative Sheila Jackson Lee may be from Texas, but she is by no means a representative of Texas on this issue. Big issues, February. The vast majority of Texans, including yours truly, are opposed to President Obama's unconstitutional change to immigration law. In the 2014 election, Texans overwhelmingly voted in candidates for state and federal offices who are opposed to amnesty for illegals and who support securing our southern border. We are proud that our new governor took the lead in states' federal lawsuits opposing Obama's unilateral change of immigration law. We have hopes the Supreme Court will rule that he overstepped his authority. Harry A. Cole, Boulevardy, Texas. Representative Sheila Jackson Lee's statement on President Obama's number of executive orders, while technically correct, is quite distorted. His immigration order was a presidential memorandum, which differs only in that it is not numbered and need not be reversed by an executive order. If one adds the number of presidential memorandums and executive orders, his total is far greater. Donald Cameron, Glendale, California. Ike and illegal immigration. Rounding up illegals and returning them to their countries of origin is a starting point. If conditions there don't improve, they'll just slip across the border again to escape poverty and violence. My suggestion is to deduct a significant amount of foreign aid from these countries. My hope is that corrupt dictators and government officials would find it in their interest to improve conditions so that U.S. aid money keeps flowing. Jim Wickert, Madison, Wisconsin. The American Legion magazine welcomes your opinions. Include your hometown and daytime phone number for verification. All letters published are subject to editing. Due to the volume of mail received, not every letter can be acknowledged. The American Legion magazine, P.O. Box 1055, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46206. Magazine at legion.org.